I'm Jen White. This is 1A. FEMA says it will pay up to $9,000 to cover the burial costs of every American who died of COVID-19. As of today, that's more than 558,000 people. According to the Washington Post, it's the largest program of its type ever offered by the federal government, and it kicks off next week. It's open to everyone, regardless of income. The Federal Emergency Management Agency has reimbursed burial costs before, but not on this scale. How will they do it? Here to help answer that question is Philip Olson. Phil is a former funeral director and now teaches technology ethics as a professor at Virginia Tech. Phil, it's great to have you back.
Thanks for having me. I would like to clarify that I've never been a funeral director.
Oh, well, thank you for that correction. Also with us, Victoria Hanneman. She's a professor of trusts and estates at Creighton University School of Law. She's written about funeral poverty and joins us from Omaha, Nebraska. Professor Hanneman, welcome.
Thank you for having me. I'm thrilled to be here.
So, Phil, what do you make of this move from the Biden administration?
Well, I think it's good to see a federal.
Okay, we're having some trouble with Phil's line. We'll work on getting him back. Professor Hanneman, what's been your response to this move?
I think it's really important that we transition human remains in a way that does not exacerbate cycles of poverty. And we have not had a federal program on this scale to assist with that in the past. And so I think it is really important that attention is being turned to this issue. With that said, I think that the current plan has a lot of problems.
Now, let's talk about the expense of funerals. How expensive are they? What average costs could people look to?
The median expense in 2019 for cemetery and burial expense is estimated to be roughly $9,000.
And is that expensive when we think about the cost of disposal?
I think that the least expensive route is direct cremation, and costs scale up from there. There are people who spend over $200,000 on funeral and burial costs. And so I don't know that $9,000 is wildly expensive, but it is also not as affordable as most Americans would hope. I mean, the 40% of Americans would have a great deal of trouble with an unexpected $400 expense. And so even the cost of direct cremation, which averages $1,200, is a lot for the average American who is not expecting this expense or not planning for this expense.
Phil, you're back with us, and I wanted to get your thoughts about this move from the Biden administration.
I think it's good to see a federal response. The funeral industry is almost entirely regulated at the state level, but the scale and urgency of need here may require something other than a state-by-state approach. The pandemic is something that we share. Well over 500,000 people in the U.S. have died of COVID-19, and care and concern for another's or other people's health and well-being should be something that we share, we have in common, something we see ourselves as needing to help each other out with, and hopefully not only now, but down the road too. So I'm really glad to see that there's more sort of interest in a kind of collective public support for practices that have been understood as largely private, personal kinds of matters.
Now, Professor Hanneman, you said you think there are some issues with the plan as it exists right now. What are your concerns?
One of my biggest concerns is that the plan treats COVID like any other disaster. And in the context of death care expenses, COVID is not. The people who are most likely to die from COVID are over the age of 65. And so it's roughly eight in 10 deaths from COVID are those over the age of 65. And so by not means testing the distribution of benefits under this plan, the program is really benefiting the baby boomer generation, which raises intergenerational equity concerns, but it is benefiting the baby boomer generation without regard to personal wealth and personal income. And this generation has accumulated more wealth than any other generation in the history of the world. So coming from an administration that is committed to addressing structural inequity, the subsidy for all benefit being provided by FEMA does nothing more than perpetuate or exacerbate existing inequities. I am a fan of providing a social safety net that assists those who are struggling with death care expense. But when we are providing $9,000 to everyone without means testing, that creates equity issues.
Phil, what do you think about that, that there is no limit on who can access these funds?
I think there are some important limits. So, for instance, the benefit does not appear to support those who may have died outside of the country, who may have been traveling when things started to shut down. Also, the benefit states that the cause of death must be COVID-related, but it's hard to know how that will play out down the road with respect to long hauler symptoms or COVID-related deaths, including, say, suicides related to mental health issues that have arisen during the pandemic due to isolation or depression. And it raises for me questions about whether the pandemic is simply a viral phenomenon or it's also a social phenomenon, one that has impacts on social well-being and mental health in ways that could also contribute to deaths.
So what I hear you saying is that when we talk about deaths caused by COVID, that you're thinking about it more broadly, not just about it being directly related to contracting the virus. Am I hearing that correctly?
Yeah, but also broader kind of social implications of the virus, right, that may have led to deaths as well.
We got this tweet that says the lowest cost to have our grandmother buried was around $5,000. She definitely didn't have it, but she did not want to be cremated. The family is still paying it. She died in January 2019. I don't want to leave a debt like this for my children. Now, Philip, you said you were not a funeral director, but you did grow up in a funeral home, so you're familiar with the business. Just explain some of the expense around funeral costs, where that money goes.
To a lot of things. I mean, everything from transporting the body from the site of death to the funeral home or crematory, sort of storing a body, cooling a body for a later funeral, paying for, embalming, if that is something that the family chooses to pursue. All kinds of expenses go into funerals, that then families can choose too, right? So, flower arrangements and guest books and all kinds of sort of peripherals, caskets. One thing that is not talked about, I guess, is burial costs, right? So there's discussion, I think, in the benefit about, funeral costs, but how about, burial costs? So opening a grave, having a concrete burial vault placed in there, and then closing the grave, those sorts of costs. I'm not sure if those are covered in the
Professor,
in this benefit.
Professor Hanneman, you say for most people, paying for funerals comes down to three options: beg, borrow, or surrender. What do you mean?
So if you have run out of options to pay for death care for a loved one and you do not have the savings set aside, in my most recent article, I characterize your options as beg, borrow, or surrender. It's interesting because crowdfunding is turning into a modern-day form of funeral insurance. People are turning to crowdfunding sites such as GoFundMe to ask friends and family to assist with unexpected death care costs. The problem inherently being there that a campaign is more likely to go viral if you have a good story and you are young and you are attractive and you are white. And so there are inherent structural issues with relying upon crowdfunding, which then causes us to look at borrowing. And there is a subprime debt market that has arisen for those without access to resources to borrow. Problematically, those interest rates can be advertised as high as 35% in some states. And the third option would be just to surrender your loved one, and the expensive disposition falls on the taxpayer. You just never go to claim your loved one. Which honestly, it is not an often discussed topic in this country, but it does happen. There are people that do not know how they are going to feed their family. And the thought of bearing death care expenses is just too much for them.
I'm Jen White. You're listening to 1A. We're talking to Victoria Hanneman. She's written about funeral poverty and is professor of trusts and estates at Creighton University School of Law in Omaha, Nebraska. Also with us, Philip Olson. He teaches technology ethics as a professor at Virginia Tech. Professor Hanneman, we did get a question about this. One listener asks, what happens if there is no money or no one claims a body? Does the government do anything? What happens in the case that you just described?
The expense ends up being borne by the locality, by the state or municipality, and this is handled very differently from state to state. But it does end up being an expense ultimately that is borne by the taxpayers.
Well, the National Funeral Directors Association have told us they have some early concerns about the pressure this might put on doctors to cite COVID-19 as the cause of death on a person's death certificate, because you need that to qualify for the financial assistance. Are death certificates something you can change, Philip?
I think so. Yeah, I think that they can be revised, but I think that has to be done, in conversation with, coroners or medical examiners.
We got this message from Jared in Tacoma Park, Maryland.
When Dad died under hospice care, we honored his wishes by donating his body to science. We opted for making pre-arrangements with Science Care. It's a for-profit company that harvests body parts, tissue samples, and organs for scientific purposes, and then, after about a month, cremated remains are returned in the mail. A mortician came to pick up his body, and it was all free of charge. It was comforting to know that Dad was contributing to medical education as a final act of service. Mom was happy to pay to place an obituary in two newspapers. Fees our church charged for musicians and staff. All told, it was about $6,000.
Professor Hanneman, because funerals for many people are such a big expense, and to tie this conversation back to the one I had earlier with Diane Rehm, what can people do to better prepare for the decisions that need to be made when someone dies?
I'm so happy that you asked this question, Jen, because this is one of my favorite things to talk about. We are extraordinarily distanced from death in the United States. We prefer aging to be invisible, and we whisk our dying off to hospitals, and we whisk our dead away to funeral homes, and it has made us death illiterate. There is a disconnect here between the consumer and the product. And I really encourage people to plan during life for death care expenses. We are vulnerable consumers because of grief when we wait until a loved one passes. And we are also cost insensitive. When you're grieving, you are not bargain shopping. You are not looking around at all of the different ways in which cost could be reduced.
Well, we got this email from Michael who says, while I think it appropriate that the government should pay or assist with funeral expense, I think it's simply ridiculous that they would pay anyone regardless of financial means. This is another program that the well-connected will make use of rather than those who really need it, much like access to medical care and vaccines for COVID. Forgive the metaphor, but this is another one-size-fits-all solution that is impractical. How much concern do you have, Professor Hanneman, that by offering to pay $9,000 for each funeral, we might in fact see the cost of funerals rising.
I do have a concern that for those funerals that have not yet been planned, that this type of reimbursement is going to create upward pressure on pricing. If funeral directors know that someone has $9,000 to spend, are they necessarily going to be promoting more affordable options? And so from a long-term policy perspective, the amount of the reimbursement and the one-size-fits-all nature of the reimbursement is really troubling to me. And I write about funeral poverty. I am thrilled that some type of program has been rolled out to assist those who are struggling. But I'm very troubled about some of these features with this plan.
Very briefly, Phil, what will you be watching as this plan rolls out?
I guess I'll be looking to see, how people respond to it, what the public thinks of it as it develops, whether this is something that could actually be expanded beyond simply the context of COVID to produce an interest in greater kind of, I guess one might call it, socialized death care.
That's Philip Olson, a professor in technology ethics at Virginia Tech, and Victoria Hanneman is a professor of trusts and estates at Creighton University School of Law in Omaha, Nebraska. Thanks to you both. Tomorrow is Friday, so we hope you'll join us for the Friday News Roundup. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. I'm Jen White. Thanks for listening, and let's talk again tomorrow. This is 1A.